Hey everyone, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about the Eufy Video Lock. It's a smart lock that's really easy to set up with just a Phillips screwdriver and no extra drilling. It's got a keyless entry, so you don't need to worry about fumbling with the keys when your hands are full. Also, you don't need to worry about handing out extra keys when you're in a pinch, your kids losing them, or people copying the key and passing it around to each other. Something else I like about the Eufy Video Lock is that it has a camera built in and it works as a doorbell as well. Personally, I think the Eufy Video Lock is great for apartments or cottages where you can't necessarily add extra holes for a video doorbell. My favorite part about it, though, is that there isn't a monthly fee and your recordings are locally stored, so you don't have to worry about someone else owning your doorbell data. You can find it on Amazon, or if you want to know more, search Eufy Video Lock, that's E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Hello and welcome to the Home Assistant Podcast. My name's Phil. Joining me, as usual, I've got Rohan. How's it going, Rohan?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good, thank you. And 2023.12 release. So we've got Frank in the house. Frank!
Yoo-hoo.
Hi. Bye, Frank.
End of year. It's sort of become like a tradition for us. So we thought, you know, let's get you
it
back
does,
in.
Huh?
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. All right. Before we get too carried away, though, this episode of the Home Assistant Podcast is sponsored by Home Assistant Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Assistant instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the Home Assistant and the ESP Home project. Configuration is done via the user interface, so no fiddling with router settings, SSL certificates, or any YAML. So yeah,
I find
Frank,
it so amazing you do that every time, just manually, right? There's no jingle here.
I didn't even have to read that. I was like, usually I stuff it up. There's usually one that I stuff it up, but I'm like, nope, Frank's here. I've got to act professional. I'm not going to read it. I'm just going to go off my memory. And I didn't stuff it.
That's funny.
So there we go.
Well done.
Thank you. Thank you, Frank. Welcome back to the podcast. We always love having you around.
Yeah.
Love the outfit. For those watching on YouTube, can see Frank in his Christmas attire, Christmas tree in the background. Yeah,
my hat.
Very festive. Yes.
Choo-choo.
I love it.
That's it.
Oh, yeah. Completely ready and done. It's the last of the year. End of the year is nearing.
Yeah. Frank's already celebrating. He's got a little bit of eggnog behind him there. It's
All right. So a couple of housekeeping things before we get into 2023.12. First of all, thank you very much to our new Patreon. So we've got George, Martin, Julian, Taylor Mann, and Chris. They are now patrons. So thank you for supporting the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Frank, can you explain to this me a little bit? There's going to be a chapter 5 of Year of the Voice. I was assuming it was just being a quarterly update. So chapter 4 would have been the last one. Like, what else is there to announce from Year of the Voice? Like, you've already done custom wake words.
You want to spoil me here, though? What do you want me to do?
No, I'm not going to spoil it.
But there is another chapter this year, that's for sure, which will be December the 13th.
December 13th.
All right.
On the Home Assistant YouTube channel.
Cool. Yes.
Links in the show notes.
Life.
This is what happens. So one time I don't show up to a creator call and it's like, hey, we have this extra surprise. You're the voice thing. It's like, okay, good. Thanks. Good job.
No, it's like nice closure for the Year of the Voice, right? Do another chapter. Yeah. It was a great year, by the way, for the Voice. It was epic.
So Frank, obviously you work for Nabu. Any ideas on is there going to be a year of next year? Do you think Nabucasa enjoyed the Year of the Voice? Like,
I don't know. We're discussing, but I don't expect, well, it will not be the Year of the Voice, right? We now had the Year of the Voice.
Yeah.
By the way, to be clear, we'll not stop working on Voice. Like, it's not over now or something. We'll continue working on it. But the focus is going to be different. Also, Mike, Voice Mike, he will still be working working for Nawakasa. It's not like he will be still there, and like it will, we will continue on it. That's part one. What it means for next year, I don't know yet. We're trying to figure out, and we're not sure if we want to settle on a single team, maybe even like, but we're not there yet. So,
right.
Good. Open.
Well, if you, I think you did a great, like, you know, you have Mike, the voice Hansen here, doing all the voice stuff. You sort of focused down on the whole, you know, year of the voice and look what you've been able to achieve. So I'm sure if you do focus on something, then yeah, it'll be awesome. But understand sort of, yeah, doesn't mean you did 1 year of.
Yeah, but a year went by so fast. Like, what can you do in a year, right?
I know. Do you see us getting a chapter six and then just continue updates to the voice, or will they just now roll into?
I don't think there will be a year of the voice update anymore after this one, right? Because like, I don't expect it to be in the last 2 weeks of the year. After that, the year of the voice is over. Now, but I you can definitely expect another voice related stream in the future. I'm pretty sure like we'll continue developing that, and there's still so much we can do there. Like, it's not done by far, but it is impressive, but it's not done.
So I subscribe to Paulus's little newsletter that he sends out once a month. I encourage you, Building it's the Open good. Home, I think it's called. It's good. Nice little tidbits from around the place. In there, I saw Nawakasa has hit 30 employees.
Isn't it amazing?
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like, so good. So yeah, I think that's a big shout out to everyone who's subscribing to Nawakasa.
Thank you so much. Like, it is absolutely nice to be able to do that. And it helps it not just Home Assistant, right? It's also a ESP Home project. Like, ESP Home also has like two employees right now, right? Keith and Jesse. But yeah, in general, it's good that we're able to put out more and put in more thought in things as well. It's not just like being to be able to put out more, but also more thought through things.
Yeah. And it's actually interesting. Something I've thought of addressing in the past, but haven't really, but maybe now is a good time to do it since we have you, Frank, is one of the things is again, I see it on like Facebook and Reddit and stuff like that, right? Where people are like, oh, it's weird that, you know, it's an open source project, but they're charging and blah, blah, blah. And like all of that kind of stuff. Right. To me, as somebody who does legitimately pay for Nawakasa, right? Like, I'm on a yearly subscription, whatever. I've been on it since pre-day one, right? Like we were, Phil and I were in the beta for it, right? And you know, there's, I think one of the things people don't realize is, you know, a lot of times people go, oh, this is like a way for people to like just make money off of a thing, and it's like, that's not exactly what that is, right? It's, you know, are there folks that get paid and stuff like that? Yeah, like Frank, I mean, this is your full-time job, right? Like,
yes, this is how I sustain my family and being able to do this, yes.
And the difference is, you know, you could go get a job somewhere else and continue to develop for Home Assistant stuff, but there's not a focus, there's not that kind of thing. So I think the point here is how can you as an organization, as Nawakasa, continue sustained development of Home Assistant, right? Because again, it's now that there's consistent updates. A couple of episodes ago, we talked about the security, the vulnerability assessments that you guys did, and there's some more coming in this round, right? In this episode here that we'll talk about slightly in a little bit. I mean, Frank, I mean, I'm kind of addressing it, but as somebody that works there, I mean, you know, any comments on that?
No, you're totally right. Like, this, we're not, like, there's no investors in Nawakasa, right? There's no, like people we have to please or something. There's nobody in our necks that wants to see things like profit or something. This is for a way for us to sustain basically the open home, right? Not just Home Assistant, but also ESP Home and the Z-Wave.js projects and ESP web tools and whatnot, what else we do, BT Home. There's so many projects related to all the open home stuff that Nawakasa funds, which now Home Assistant itself is the biggest one and the most well, if you're listening to this podcast, probably the one that interests you the most.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is about funding those projects, getting people to work on it and make sure that people like me actually can focus and work on this full time. But along me at this point, 30 other people or 29 other people, basically. And that's just amazing. It's cool that we're able to do that without having any, again, like people that require we have to do something. It's still focused on what we want to do with the product and with Home Assistant as a product then and as a project. Like, what does the community want? We built this for, if I look at myself, I think the thing that changed is basically nothing. If I look at myself back 6 years ago, that was more stressful life for me. Like, I had a full-time job, I had kids at home, and I still try to push out 20 to 40 hours a week of Home Assistant. I'm not sure how I did that at the time. But that was because I liked the project. And right now I'm being able to focus on that, but I still do it for the same reasons. I like the project. I like the goals it has. I like what we do. And that's the driving factor behind it. Yeah. I think that pretty much sums it up. We all love to do what we do.
Exactly. And I mean, at the end of the day, it is entirely optional, right?
Yes.
There's no, you don't lose any of the core functionality. I mean, you add some nicer, let's call it premium features, right? So that you don't need to go in and, again, as our ad read says, you don't need to fiddle with SSL settings or doing certificates and all of that stuff, right? And port forwarding and so on and so forth. So it's, again, it's something I've actually thought of addressing for a while, and I just didn't want to get in a flame war on Facebook with people, right?
Maybe don't agree, and that's fine. And like in the end, like we'll if you don't want to use the Nowakasa service, like that's fine too. In the end, we're able to do the things we do, and that includes getting people to work on Home Assistant full time, doing the recent research for security, right, doing security audits. But also like basic stuff you will never think about, like running the forums. That's a huge beach, a huge beast to run that thing, right?
Yeah.
But there are many of those things that we can do now simply because there's funding. And
agreed. That's good. Agreed.
Keep it up.
Nothing but positive, to be honest.
Agreed.
Something that randomly came up in my Google News feed was a blog post from GitHub, and they did their own, because you know Home Assistant is what, like the second most popular open source project on GitHub for the past few years. Although 1 year they read, like I think it was 2021, for some reason Home Assistant wasn't in the top list, which
they didn't release a report in 2021, so that's
interesting. That'll do it.
That's cool. No, we're doing fine in that, like in the list. That's amazing.
So GitHub's came out and they did their own security analysis. They actually had reported, I think, a few of the things that you had already addressed a couple of months ago. Well, I'm guessing you would report them thanks to the GitHub team disclosing them. So I just thought it would be just a good shout out to the GitHub team, you know, supporting open source and supporting Home Assistant disclosing those vulnerabilities responsibly to the team. It was just interesting to see from behind the scenes, you know, how GitHub went to find those vulnerabilities and also how they went and tried to report them. You know, they emailed security at Home Assistant, which they just didn't get a response. So like, oh, well, I guess we'll open a pull request. And then, you know, you reply back, you know, with it immediately. It said, no, we're using GitHub private, you know, notifications, do it this way. And
That things were resolved. That should have happened there. We corrected it quickly and then went to work from that point on. So at the time that the GitHub security lab actually started researching this from their own, like, goodness, which absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for doing that. That was at the same moment that where we had running the security audit, the Nowakasa range with a Cure 53. So they found some issues that Cure 53 also found, so there was it was good, like at least they found both the same issues, and somehow that's good at the other end. It's like maybe but it's good.
What did that timing just work out, or was it you guys hired accidental. These guys because of, oh, that's so funny. Okay.
It's purely accidental. They didn't even know. Nobody knew we were doing the security audit at first. Right. And we're internally started doing that and like see what comes out of it and close down what's going on. And then they at the same time started to do on their own initiative also in security audit. So we got double audits.
Nice.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Good.
Yeah. Well, I think so. I think thank you to GitHub. Makes everyone's little home lab a little bit more secure.
Yeah, I love that. I didn't even know GitHub did that kind of stuff. Like I know obviously from like a product perspective, they have that kind of stuff, but I didn't know that they were like, hey, let's go do an example of this and we'll use Home Assistant. Like that's kind of cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's very cool. 2023.12. Frank, you do the release notes every month religiously. We always... I'm thinking you're like, oh, what does this even mean, Frank? Like you give us the TLDR. You do a great, you know, summary in the creators call. So also just personally thank you to everyone that's makes themselves available in the NABU team. You know, every month we've always got someone that we can ask questions to and try and get clarification on. So Rahan and I know a little bit what we're talking about when mm-hmm. this episode comes out. So thank you, you know, everyone. And Frank, I know you do a lot of work as well on these. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
So 2023.12, a rebranded login page is here. I first saw this and I was like, okay, cool. I mean, we're all going to that nice, you know, avatar, clicky way. Fair enough. All right. But what I really like about this is actually a bit technical, is that if you're hosted, so if you're accessing the login page on your local network, you'll see, you know, now you see avatars, who wants to log in, select your user, enter the password. But if you're not logged in on a local network, it'll ask you for a username and password because of security vulnerabilities. Like you don't want to disclose people's names if you're on the outside network, which I thought was really like that was great, you know, forward thinking on the Home Assistant team.
So for the people that are listening, by the way, what changed the redesign of the login page? Now it looks a little bit like what we did in onboarding in September. So the same layout and design from that part has been put into the login screens. And now it looks a little bit like your MacBook or your back in the day, how Windows looked, that you had those like avatars seeing with your name that you click on your name and then fill in your password. That concept has been brought to the Home Assistant login page too. So if you have like, I don't know, in my case, it will show Frank and Daphne and Lily, my daughter as well in the end, and they can click on their name and fill in their password when they're on the local network, which is really visual and looks really nice and recognizable. But yeah, indeed, Phil, if you go outside of your home network, you don't want to like leak or expose that data. So at that point, it will just show you a normal login page. Redesigned still, looks new layout, new design. But just the username and password.
Yeah. So nice.
For the folks that are using it from a reverse proxy perspective, like let's say I have Nginx on the outside and stuff like that, does it pull in the if you forward the external address, does it pull in recognize
so
that?
So we changed the reverse proxy handling in Home Assistant, I believe, a year ago or something. I rewrote that part, which checks if the headers are correct. If not, Home Assistant will actually block the request. Cool. So you have your reverse proxy has to be set up correctly, otherwise Home Assistant would not even work. So we're pretty sure of that. And then because we know it works, we can also then know where the connection is coming from. Behave the same and correctly.
Very cool.
Right. There are two things that are not really visible in this, but what I think is really interesting. One is, have you ever forgot to check the Remember Me checkbox?
All the time.
Yeah. And then refreshing like, darn it, I forgot to check that checkbox.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, well, if you now have the local login screen, you will not have that checkbox. And the reason why is because you're local, it will check it for you. It will not show that. So that will not happen anymore on a local network. And another big difference is if you're using the local, what's it called, a trusted networks. So you can add a trusted network setting. I'm not a fan of it, by the way, but you could, for example, add a user in your local network that, for example, from your wall tablet device can log in. Like a kiosk or a wall tablet user account. Yeah. that will not have a password and just click and go. This works now in such a way that it's incorporated in that same screen. So you will see that kiosk user pop up. You can click it, but the login is now smart enough to detect that there's a local option available and will use that and will just not ask for a password. You don't have to switch different like login methods anymore.
That's cool.
It's also a nice optimization that has been done there. So I think this whole login stuff, it's now really friendly. It now says welcome home, which Madalena came up with, which is absolutely nice. And Matthias made the design. And yeah, I think it's a great improvement for friendliness in the home.
So we've now got reboot to safe mode. I think there's a redesigned shutdown menu that's sort of from the Windows era. Mm-hmm. When do we get control alt delete to log into Home Assistant? So I think that's the only missing feature coming.
I know, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah. It feels that close, huh?
Yeah, that close.
And it just, yeah, I just love the little users. It feels so homey. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Right? To-dos. You guys did a lot more work on that. I said this in the creator call last time, Frank, when you guys announced that you're moving to the to-dos and stuff like that. I'm like, I actually really like this. I think it's a pretty cool feature.
If you're listening to this, this is cut from the beta release notes. I'm pretty much not sure if I will leave it in, but in the beta release notes, that is. No, because like you're totally right, right? This is a big thing. There's a lot of work being done about to-dos this cycle, but I'm not sure if it's much that is to talk about, but go ahead. Like there's a lot of stuff happening under the hood, but not really different. I think
due dates and descriptions are pretty important for a to-do list.
Yeah. So we added support for due dates and descriptions. However, they're not shown in the UI yet because the design isn't done yet and hasn't been built yet, but you can also not set it or see them. So you could use them using service calls, I guess.
And, but does that then flow down to like integrations, like Google Tasks, for example? If I set a description, will that then flow into my Google Tasks description? Like, I think that's
But it's useful. Not displayed yet, right? So,
right.
It's in the beta release notes because I think there's a lot of work to be done, and there's a lot of work done, and there's also a lot of people that ask questions that want these features, and we're actually working on it, and I'm trying to figure out a way to communicate. We are, but it's not there yet. Basically. So yes, it's big that due dates or descriptions are already baked into the Home Assistant like core and the engine, but it's not visible and usable yet, maybe in a way.
Okay, so it's coming. Basically it's coming. For all users. Yeah, that's good. I mean, honestly, good enough in my books, right? There's that intent and you guys have been pretty good at delivering features as committed kind of thing, right? So
I must say this is almost fully Alan Porter. Like Alan is baking up this stuff and he is just doing this so well. So
I love it. I love it. No, it's cool. And you guys have a couple more. So Picnic and Our Groceries that can manage the grocery, that can manage the shopping list in there now.
Yes. And CalDev too.
And CalDev. Yeah. Yeah,
so not much work happening on to-do lists, just.
I know, right?
Being able to fully automate a shopping list and due dates and CalDev support.
Yeah, well, CalDev fully to the UI, also done by Alan, by the way. He had some spare time, I guess. I don't know what. And we have also two new services. One was requested a lot, like how do I get all the items from my list? So there's now a service called To-Do Get Items to get all the items from a list, which will, by the way, contain due date and description if available. There's also one that's made by Robert. He created a to-do remove completed items, which is just a really simple shortcut service to just clean up any list with all the checked off items, which I think is really helpful. The interesting one in this list, by the way, you just named, I think is Picnic. And why I think it's interesting is because I use Picnic. I am a customer of Picnic.
That's why we've got it in the show notes, because I know you use Picnic.
Not a liar. Anyways, the cool thing about what it is, what else is in this release, which probably, I'm going through a chapter spoiler, but we have voice control for to-do lists in the cycle.
Yeah.
So you can actually put something on your list, on one of the lists, not just your shopping list, but any list. So if I hook up my Picnic, I get my Picnic. Picnic is, by the way, a grocery store. I get my order, my shopping cart contents as a to-do list. So that means that I can use my voice assistant to put things in my groceries. However, there is no way to, in general, to pick the exact item, right? If I say add milk to my shopping list, that works. But if you look at an actual store, that milk that has different brands and whatnot, yeah, and like, right? That's a problem. So what Picnic actually built and what Duco contributor actually built is if you give it an item to add to your to-do list, which is then your shopping list basket, it will actually do a search and find that product for you and add the actual product. That's putting cool. This all together, I can shout,
yes,
hey, now add milk to my shopping list. It will search for the milk that I use and add the actual milk into my basket, which I can order at the end of the week. This is just mind-blowing. This is all coming together.
That's
now.
Great. That's
I like
great.
It.
Yeah, this is really cool. Yeah,
but when you first described Picnic like ages ago, Frank, I was like, I need this like locally. Like I think it's only in the Netherlands. Something that is available, which is frustrating. but yeah, it's amazing.
But hopefully this will inspire more. Like, I know there's over here, there's like Instacart and stuff like that, right? Hopefully it'll inspire more of those kind of integrations.
It's just cool to be able to shout to put something on your shopping list. I think that's a useful feature in general. Or groceries, by the way, is added this release as a new integration, which they have an app which you can then manage your grocery lists. And that's kind of nice that it's there too. You can just shout to put things on it.
Yes. Yeah. I've been doing that for a bit with my Amazon Echo. I use, what's it called? AnyList, I think. But it doesn't integrate into Home Assistant, right? So I may see if our groceries has a nice integration there.
I would love the won't say her name, but the Amazon Echo Media Player custom component in Hacks. I would love them to expose like the shopping list from her into Home Assistant, because I know they've done other things. You know, I can even get Bluetooth devices now through that component. Yeah. They had guard settings and media player controls. Like, it'd be awesome if they could get access to that and then sync that with Home Assistant as well. That would be fantastic. There is a new thermostat card that's been added as of this release. Frank, is this one that you showed us a few months ago with it like animating and
in September we replaced the entity dialogue for climate entities, right? So if you click on a climate entity, you get that nice fancy dialogue with a nice blink slider and it looked beautiful. And it was September. And a lot of people asked, like, why can I not add this one to my dashboard? If I add the climate entity to my dashboard and use a thermostat card, it looks a bit like outdated and ugly. So many people ask for it. It's like cold in most parts of the world right now, and the most home assistant users will have a cold part of the world. So it would be nice to do a December like overhaul of the thermostat card. So what we did is we actually put that nice dial that you see in the climate entity dialogue into the thermostat card. It's a replacement. So it will, if you upgrade, your thermostat card will automatically look fancy and nice.
It does look fancy and nice. I do like
that. It's beautiful.
Right? It has been changed a little bit to handle more compact screens, because like you can like display more compact on your dashboard, right? So it will handle that better. It will handle resizing and things like that. And what's really interesting, if you look at the screenshots, you will see those little bar underneath it with the HVAC modes and the presets. Mm. Those are actually the tile card features. So what we've done is we have decoupled the tile card features to be reusable for other cards. And the climate card has been enabled to use them. So that means if you like to show the HVAC modes on your climate card, you can enable them and you can select which ones you want. And the same for presets and how you want to show them, exactly the same as on a tile card.
So
that's configurable. Just looks good. I like them a lot.
That's nice. Yeah. I love the refreshing, the rebranding, not the rebranding, but like, oh, actually you guys rebranded too, Homelessness as a whole. Yeah. Right. But like, I do love just even the UI updates, right? So.
Yep. The same change, by the way, has been made to the humidifier and water heater cards too. If you're using those, right, you've applied the same styling to those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just so you know.
That's cool. All right. And Phil just added one on my screen. I'm just watching.
Magic features reappear.
Yeah. This is how technology works, right?
or it doesn't work, huh, Ron?
That's right. There are now numbers for tile cards. So what that means is, you can have number entities and helpers, and then that means you can start to say, okay, you can control that number entity from the tile card directly from there. And that means you can have like an up down button or a slider or stuff like that. So that's actually pretty cool. So now that means if I have some kind of a variable that I'm using just to control something else, I can, before that would have to be go in and set it manually and whatever. Now I can just have it right in the UI, move a slider, up down button, whatever it is, and control that. Right. So that is pretty neat.
I like that tile card so much.
Yeah.
It's so versatile. Yes, mm-hmm. It is. It looks good. It's versatile. And now, yeah, more features are popping up that you can add to them.
Yeah. No, that's great.
The history dashboard has now got long-term statistics being displayed. So previously, the graphs would only show the state history, which was limited to a few days. I've only found it to be limited to 24 hours, but maybe that's my own settings, whatever reason. But yeah. So, yeah, it's not very useful generally, but now you've got long-term statistics. So what, Frank, how like long-term stats are we talking? Like, is there a setting that people need to set to get long-term stats? Or
we store long-term statistic until forever, manually maybe delete your database. I don't know, but we don't delete anything from long-term statistics at all.
Nice.
We've been doing long-term statistics since we introduced the energy dashboard, basically, right? That's why it was developed. Mm-hmm. It was developed for the energy dashboard. Then we rolled it out to all other places as well. But what's cool about this is that if you previously looked at the history page and you see a graph, the graph would stop. If you have the default settings, that would be 10 days. So if you go back further than 10 days, the graph would end. And if you're like Phil, probably 24 hours, or me, I have 3 days set. And then the graph would end. And what people tend to do is then change the purge time on the database to keep more state history around, for example, for a year. And then they got like humongous databases that backups become slow and big and like that. And actually, that's not needed because we have all data downsampled, stored in long-term state history as well, right? We have long-term history, which like merges all data into hourly blocks, so 24 records per day. And yeah, and it keeps that forever because it's efficient. So what people can do now is just change your purge time back to, I don't know, 10 days, 3 days, something like that, something sane.
Right.
Have smaller backups because the history page will now pick up that long-term statistic history. And it will show you in the graph if it's using the state's history, which is a normal blue graph, and the graph becomes light blue once it starts using the long-term statistic. But you can go back in history, which is just fine. It works now, even without storing gigabytes of data. I think this is a good feature, and which CarWatts, or isn't the name is Tim, I believe, has done really well.
Yeah, that is really nice.
And it's fast, by the way. Like, I queried my power and energy usage on my Raspberry Pi 4, which is a Home Assistant Yellow, and it just pops up a whole year of energy in like a second. Like it's so fast.
All right. So default dashboard options. So as you may have already seen, when you first log in, first install, Home Assistant has a default dashboard there, and typically that's everything, right? That's in that's in your entity's database. Basically, gets populated in the default dashboard. Now it's a little more customizable. So basically you can change the behavior to say, hey, you know what? I want to hide certain areas. I want to hide entities that don't belong to a specific area, or even hide like the energy summary card, right? So That's nice. It's because I do find that like when you add a couple of entities at first and it's, you get your default dashboard, it is just overwhelming, right? It's just, here is this list of stuff. So a little more consumable, which I like.
I think it helps new users, right? If you starting out Home Assistant, you want to declutter that a little bit, you can now easily without diving into the deep rabbit hole of dashboarding instantly. I think that helps a lot. It also makes, and this is more of a like the future thing, this actually sets precedence for being able to add options to dashboards that are generated, right? Mm. Which can be helpful in the future because we could see maybe more dashboards that are generated in different styles and different things with options to it. So this is groundwork for doing maybe stuff like that in the future.
Very cool. Yeah.
For those that like to use blueprints, you can now re-import a blueprint. So that's handy if there's a new version. Perhaps you're maybe found a blueprint ages ago on a forum somewhere and you've updated your Home Assistant instance and it's no longer working. You can now just hit a little re-import button and it'll overwrite the existing one on your system and away it goes. I think there was a warning in there that, you know, if, you know, it will, like, it's not going to keep a backup copy, essentially. So if you do hit that re-import button, the original is going to get erased. I assume also that existing automations that were created from that blueprint won't be updated. Am I right, Frank?
They will also be updated because the blueprint changes. So this is not an update. This is absolutely not an update. We do want to create an update once, but that's a highly complex problem because if the blueprint gets new fields, how do you apply those in your automations and things like that? So that's a complex situation we're looking to have different ideas for, but it's not there yet. So at this point, if people want to update the blueprints, they have to go to disk using some kind of editor, find out that file, figure out where they got it from, copy that YAML over, overwrite the file, which is just not friendly. So this is more of an in-between solution that just mitigates just that, right? You can update it, like override it and re-download it and re-import it now without having to go through the file editors. That's basically what it does. I think that's already a good step for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's nice. Moving on, there's a height sensor now for the IKEA Edison desk, which is great. I have had so much issues with that integration. It's it picks up my desk, I'll adjust it, and then doesn't pick it up anymore. Right? It's really? Yeah. I'm using it right now. Like I'm on an Edison desk, right? And if I look at Home Assistant, I had updated my Home Assistant install when we started recording this. And then I can see it now. But if I modify it, it'll just go away. And I was like, that's interesting. So, but I think it's just a Bluetooth thing. But
could be. I don't know. I don't have such a desk guy.
Yeah.
I'm still sticking to the ESP32 custom code. That ESP32 library that's running it at the moment for my Edison desk, and I'm scared to touch it. Like, if it's working, don't fix it, right?
So I got some like thick old oak desk with some big welded like steel feet underneath it. Like, there's just no way in hell this is going to be like going up and down anyway.
Going up or down,
not going solid to happen. Plank of wood. This is solid plank. This is not going anywhere. So I don't have that experience at all.
That's funny. It's I always think it's a good idea until I don't stand, right? I just end up sitting the whole time.
That's what I'm afraid for. I've considered buying such a desk that goes up and down, standing desk. But in the end, I'm just indeed afraid I will never use it.
Yeah.
I think the idea of me buying this desk was that I would automate, you know, so that, you know, I'd walk into the office. When I leave the office, I'll come back and it would force me to stand, but I haven't put that automation in because, you know, I'm lazy, right? Like I'm being lazy, making myself even more lazier. But
issue number one, right? It's
So there's my problem. That's funny. The official Roborock integration can now display maps. So if you have your Roborock vacuum cleaner integrated in Home Assistant, it will now display the map of your home and you can see where the vacuum cleaner has been.
Image entities. Those are provided as image entities. So you can use and automate them even.
Yeah. I know I'm using the custom one, and there's a Roborock card that you can use. And it's actually really nice. You can click and drag zones all within Home Assistant. Like if you wanted to, you don't have to open the Roborock app, which is, amazing because I hate opening up that an app. I just do it all from Home Assistant. I think the Roborock integrations, both the official one and the custom one in Hacks, are really good to see getting worked on. And also we've got in this little section here, we've got better YAML error messages. I am a big YAML user, so I was very happy to see this. Any updates to YAML error messages? We can improve all error messages that originate from manual YAML configuration. So the messages should be now more detailed, more readable, and point out correctly which line and file the error is located at. Frank, does this support packages?
Yes, no matter how deep you packaged and included merge things, it will no longer say something in line question mark.
Yes.
Line file question mark. Yes, that's gone. It will not actually tell you where it is, which is absolutely stunning. Eric did a great, great job there. It's a bit ironic, right? We're moving away from YAML on so many places, but now it's fixed. And that's good, by the way. It's good that it's fixed because especially if you like writing your automations and scripts in YAML, this will be a great help.
And there's still people that use it, right? So again, yes, Phil, like you said, like
absolutely.
You're still using it, whatever. So it's,
No, that has been my biggest, I would just hit the reload button and go, sorry. Or I'd check, is this configuration valid? Nope, sorry, there's an error on random, question mark.
Yeah, we changed that. I even didn't write that part, but there are more changes in this regard. So if you try to reload or restart Home Assistant, it will now figure out under the hood if there's a difference between can I start or is this just an error that I can start up with?
Yeah.
And previously, if you would have an integration that doesn't exist, it would block restart because it's in your YAML and didn't exist and then something is wrong. But actually, Home Assistant nowadays is really resilient and can start up in those cases. So that's also something we fixed. We now figure out which error is actually blocking Home Assistant from starting versus which one will generate a warning. And in case of a warning, it will just continue to restart and then warn you afterwards because it doesn't fully break the system.
Even to the level of which automation is broken now. I remember previously, if you had one automation that was broken, that's all of your automations were done, right? Now you can see the UI. Yeah. No, this automation is disabled because it's got an error. Go and fix it, sort of thing.
And the rest keeps working.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's cool. Which is great when you're, especially when you're testing automations and stuff like that, right? It's,
Yep.
All right. So let's talk about some of the new integrations that came in, starting with Linear Garage Door. So there you go. For those of you that are not big fans of MyQ right now, if you are switching them, Linear Garage Door is a great, great option in this case. Who is MyQ? It's again, that's been I think I've aired my frustration about that one a few times in the last few years, right? And then it's just nail in the coffin now. Linear Garage Door is now there. You can now go in and control any doors that are Linear branded.
And My Permobile, I think I pronounced that correctly. You can now provide various sensors for your Permobile wheelchair.
That's fantastic. Nice. I like that.
I love this one.
Yeah.
If there's any superb use case for a home automation system, it's people that have disabilities, right? And being able to provide information and integrate with things like this, I think is just, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we had Peter on a couple of episodes ago, right? Mountain bike accident, bam, broke his neck, and now he's in a wheelchair. So, and he uses Home Assistant, right, to turn the lights on around the house and all that. So, fantastic. I love when Home Assistant can really, help people like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
100%.
Totally agreed. We spoke about this, but our groceries, from a shopping list perspective, is in here as well.
We've got V2C, so you can control and monitor your local V2C Triton EVSE. I'm guessing that's an electric vehicle something.
Charger. So, it's a charger.
Yeah,
charger.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
And I'm going to butcher this name, Deviolet?
I will approve. I don't know.
If you have any of their wireless speakers, you can now bring them into Home Assistant. Very nice.
Yeah. Yep.
A breaking change for the breaking changes section, Frank. I noticed you've changed it to backwards incompatible now. What?
Backwards incompatible changes. Yes, correct. Yeah. And yep. I already got some comments. I do want to explain. So thank you for putting it in here. So breaking changes originates from a time where Home Assistant would literally not start break. Up anymore and break. Back in the day, we added an option to an integration, which was a YAML option, you had to change your YAML config before you upgraded, or else Home Assistant wouldn't start at all. It would just die. It would just exit. It would just stop. That's where the original breaking changes came from. I think the last year we changed, we did a really good job. We changed the policies around how we handle backwards incompatibilities, right? Mm-hmm. And how we handle deprecation periods. The list got so much smaller. We in general put tons of efforts in reducing breaking changes as much we can, unless we can absolutely not go around it. I think it's, and then again, even with everything that's in this list today, even like it's not blocking Home Assistant, it's not breaking Home Assistant. It will start up. There might be things you need to adjust, but that. So backwards incompatible changes are way more fitting than calling it breaking, which sounds instantly scary as well. So
yeah,
that's why. I think it's justified.
Calendar.listEventService. I'm just going to ask. So it uses an outdated response format and is now deprecated, pending for removal in 2024.6. So there's your six-month thing.
Yep.
You should now use the GetEvents end service, which supports multiple entities. Is this a record for like the shortest service that's gone from like created to Home Assistant and then deprecated?
Like, so, yes.
It hasn't been around that long and we're already deprecating a service.
Nah. So in July, in the July release, we introduced something groundbreaking for Home Assistant, like a fundamental change that services can now respond with values, right? That was absolutely a big thing. And the two services we used to showcase that was calendar.listEvents and weather.getForecast, which is the next breaking change you haven't got into yet.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we came to the conclusion, and this took months of discussions, but we came to the conclusion we made a design error. And that's really unfortunate. Because some services can target multiple entities at a time, right? If you call light.turnOn, you can target two lights and both will turn on. But what if I get the calendar list events and target two calendars? What do you expect back? And this has been in discussion for a long time. We finally came to a decision with a lot of people to, in that case, if you ask the list events for two calendars, to return the information from both calendars. But that isn't compatible with what we made in July. So we figured out a way to introduce two new services, leave the out services in, the old services in for a 6 month deprecation period. If you use them, we will raise a repair issue for you as well. So we will warn you in case that happens so you know exactly where it's happening and that it's happening for you. But this is something to correct that design mistake. And it's just these two services that are affected. We're happy with that. It's just these. And let's correct this error now, get it out of the way, and continue with something better that we've all missed, basically, and not done right.
Yeah, I guess the good thing is that they have, like, they are, you know, fairly new services, right? So the longer you leave them unfixed, the more people
use them. And
Particularly around, like, the weather get forecast service, right? Like, I know there's a few custom integrations around the place that haven't upgraded to use the new version, right? So at least now put it out as deprecated so that when they do come around to getting updated, they don't have to be then updated again.
Yeah, this isn't really on 14.1, but yeah, it is better for what we want to achieve. We want to have more services that respond stuff and do absolutely nice stuff with it. You can absolutely make the weirdest automation you can like think of. Like it opens up so many doors of creativity and automatability. And we have to do this right. This is a fundamental thing to our framework.
Agreed. And I like the nomenclature too, like forecast versus forecasts, right? So you're using a plural so that it's, you understand that it's multiple. It could be single as well, right? Just for clarity's sake. Yep. A list of one is still a list.
A list of none is still a list.
Yeah, it's true. So the Home Assistant API has a backward incompatible change as well, it sounds like. So when you're when you're calling a service from the REST API, basically the service used to be canceled if a connection got dropped. So if you relied on that behavior, you'd need to go in and look at the logic, so on and so forth. So now the connection drop won't cancel the service call. If whatever, you had a network blip or something like that, or your laptop just disconnected from your wireless, whatever that is, that won't cause an issue anymore. That service will run. I'm trying to explain this one so that without getting my tongue twisted here.
There are people programming against Home Assistant from external pieces of software, right? Like their own scripts somewhere written in whatnot.
Yeah.
And they talk directly to the API of Home Assistant to automate from externally, or I don't know what reason. And that behavior changed a bit. So if your external application like kills itself before the connection or the service call is finished, it will keep running. Additionally, the service call, if you do a service call to that endpoint on that API with your custom programming work, the Home Assistant will only return or finish the service call, the request, the HTTP request you do, once the service call has been processed. Those are two. The last one is actually accidentally already happened. So this one is breaking English, but already happened a couple of releases back. Nevertheless, it's complete for completeness. It's now listed here.
Yeah.
This is a case where most people should not care about unless you're programming against Home Assistant yourself.
No, exactly. I know one of the common things I've seen for the REST API is trying to pull Zigbee radio information out from there. I've seen a couple of scripts that pull that in, but
didn't know.
Open exchange rates. So the rounding of an exchange rate has now been removed. Exchange rates are a lot more sensitive to small changes. Generally, your currency fluctuations will have more than just two decimal places, despite what you see on the nightly news. So Home Assistant will now display the full rounding or the full value of the exchange rate. If you do rely on them being rounded, best to use a template sensor and do your own rounding. You can do rounding to two decimal places, three decimal places, whatever you need. The raw value of that open exchange rate will now be returned from that sensor value.
You can just set it on the entity now, right? If you go into the entity options, you can show the display position and change it.
Yeah.
Like even, that's a really helpful feature.
All right. SMTP. So that integration will now send images as attachments to a plain text email instead of HTML when the HTML field is not set. So if you have email set up from Home Assistant, this will affect that. In the past, if you were to send any HTML in line when the HTML wasn't set, basically it'll send all the images and now it won't, right? So to continue sending it that way, set the HTML field and then include the image tag in HTML within the block. So makes sense, kind of. Logical.
If you send HTML, it will inline, otherwise it will attach. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people use this for sending, you know, images of cameras or, you know, motion events from their camera that Home Assistant has a snapshot of. Well, I guess, you know, people might have, you know, like a Scraper account. Maybe they'll send it to a script that's monitoring a email address in Amazon or something, and away they go.
Weekly pictures of your dog or cat eating or something like that just goes.
Weekly picture of the cat litter, automatic cat litter box, you know, when it needs to be replaced.
That's right.
All right. We spoke about it before. MyQ is gone, dusted, officially removed from Home Assistant. Home Assistant's like, screw this, not even giving you a 6 months notice, just you're gone.
There's, in case you have missed it, there's an extensive blog post about it on why it's gone, right? so in case you listen to this and are wondering what the hell. Everyone reported on it, like it went like berserk in all media. But yes, MyQ.
And they're not backing down. I'm surprised they haven't like been ashamed into like, oh, we're not going to do that anymore. Instead, they're like, no, we want to sell ads through our app. Like, screw you guys. I would
definitely still welcome them. Like, please, like you, if you're listening and change your mind, don't feel ashamed. We're happy to help and make it something positive again. But right now, they have been, getting into a PR mess, that's for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. EQ3 Bluetooth smart thermostats. I guess that function, entity is just, or the integration has just not worked for a while. So it makes sense to pull it out.
Old Bluetooth stack.
Yeah.
Yep. Gone.
All right. So that's it for the breaking changes, aka the backward incompatible change.
I will probably keep it calling backwards breaking changes for a long time, I guess. But
yeah. No, I like that.
And that's the last release of the year, 2023. Frank, what's your favorite feature of 2023 that you can?
I've been to them all before this recording, and I'm like, what would be? I kind of like try to anticipate on this question, and I've looked at it, and I have no idea. There's so much goodness in here. I really like all the new entity dialogues. I think they look slick in general. I like everything that happens to the talk art. I think that thing is really versatile and makes up for very good dashboarding in general. I love a lot of the language stuff we did this year because I think it helps with usability for many users. So the translations of services and translations of attributes and things like that, where there's many things now translatable and even not mentioned in this release, but in the 0.12 release, we now have the ability to translate error messages you get in UI 2.
Cool.
So that foundation has been made. I really like bringing that in because it adds so much to user friendliness and more user facing thought of how you show things. I think that those are really, really a good addition. So I think those were probably my top of the list, besides all the voice stuff, because that's just cool. I think that would be some up of my top things.
Brian, what's on your top of your list?
Frank kind of took my main one, which was the tile cards and the entities, like how they show. That's something, again, when I do use the UI, that's something I interact with a ton, right? So I really like how that looks and just feels and like that kind of thing. The other thing is what Frank said at the end there is more just fascinated with all the year the voice stuff. I think you know, there's been some excellent effort put into that. Mike did a great job with a lot of those things, right? So just been playing around with the little M5 stack Atom Echo and trying to get just playing around with it. It's just been fun. Eventually I'd love to sub out my Amazon Echoes for that at some point. I guess I want to see what Chapter 5 has in store. Those are my two big ones.
Nice. Well, I think if I was going to choose two, seeing as you both not choosing your favorite, you're going to go two, it would be calendar and the to-do list.
Yeah. The calendar was 2022, mate.
Okay.
It was December 2022.
Wow.
Like, sorry. I'm confused. My apologies. I've got confused.
No, it's my curse. I remember like which one is where and which release. Like, this was created by Alan in December 2022. It was the Christmas gift of December last year.
It was. My apologies. Confused there is the returning, like the list events and the response, like the return values. That has ultimately change the way I interact with calendars now. That's why I primarily use it. You know, list events really changed it. And to-do lists, I think I'm going to get really big into that. I know you guys mentioned the tile cards, but I've been using mushroom cards and I feel as though a lot of inspiration has come from those. So for me, they haven't been a wowing factor as much as...
Yeah.
I've been slowly moving over to the tile cards, but yeah, I think...
Yeah, I use both as well. I just like the native construct in there.
Yeah. Returning data now is a game changer in terms of service calls, right?
Like, yeah, that's a good one too, but needs to mature a little, right? Like it is still fresh and it's something that's not that easy. So that needs time, I think. But it's good to see things happening there. It's definitely a big one.
Well, it's one of the most fundamental changes to... like service calls right now, they be able to actually get data back from them. So it makes sense. It's going to take a while for it to mature at least. Now, last year, Frank, we had a little chat and you asked me, you know, what's your wish list for 2023? I actually said a robot lawnmower in my life. It hasn't happened, but Home Assistant has a lawnmower component.
That's
now.
That's true.
Yours, you said you wanted cameras, but you didn't think they were mature enough yet. Do you think 2023 has sort of seen any improvements to cameras? Or
I haven't reviewed what I said.
That I got like, you.
You got me on my own. No, this is. I think I ranted about doorbells.
Yes, you did. Yes.
Yes.
Right.
And yeah.
I got one.
You got one. There you
go. Yes. I got one of those Rio links, which locally work.
Yep.
I like them.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I guess my wish was heard.
That's good. And how do you find it? Like, local control, PoE, I'm guessing.
Yeah, indeed.
No cloud, like Rio Link, I don't know.
I'm a bit scared. Rio Link has a cloud. I'm thinking about getting their NVR as well. I looked into Frigate. I played with Frigate a lot, but I feel like this is more of an appliance deal. This should just do and work, and not too much fancy around it. Maybe, maybe I'll. I'm not sure. I haven't like decided on that one yet.
There you go.
Well, nice.
Wish was
fixed.
There you go.
But did you have one? Do you remember?
Well, Warren wasn't here last year, so
I wasn't there for last year.
I wasn't here. That's true. You weren't here.
I did have a wish list. I don't remember what it was. I don't think I ever said it on the show. I wasn't here for that one. Was that?
Did it even get answered? If you don't put it out there for it to be wished, does it even become fulfilled?
Probably not. Probably not. None of my luck. No. Yeah, I don't know. But are we doing 2024 wish list?
Do it. Yeah, what's your 2024?
I could do two wish lists, by the way. One is like more smart home focused and the other one is like more Home Assistant focused.
Yeah, yeah.
What would you like in Home Assistant? What would you like to see in the smart home devices world happening?
I think so smart home wise, again, way more local stuff, way more. I'd love to see actual progression in Matter.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Yeah,
and Thread for that matter too. Just again, the ability to have
Thread for that matter. Cool. That's a really nice expression. I got to really remember that one. Yeah.
and even expansion into the Matter standard itself, right? So that more people can start building against it. And we've talked about this on the Creators Call a few times where Matter's great, but it can only do so much today, right? There's still a lot of pieces missing there, that kind of thing. It is cool that the Matter team uses Home Assistant as their testing. Was it Matter that was using that? Yeah, to test.
There are very many companies that use Home Assistant to test spec. With Matter,
yeah.
Right? The spec.
Yeah.
It's just easy to play with and debug as well, right? So that makes it our developer experience is really good because we're open source and trying to make it accessible for everyone compared to any other closed source project, right?
So which I still think is super cool.
Helps. Yeah, that is super cool. I'm still the skeptical one. I'm still not a Matter believer, but that might change.
I'm
it changed
either.
A little bit already. Like I do think it has potential right now instead of no potential before. Yeah. So I got more positive myself, but still, I think this will still take years to be mature.
100%. 100%. I want that acceleration, right? If that makes sense. Okay. Like,
yeah, that makes sense.
Let it not be years. Let it be 2024, right? That's I think the other thing I'd love to see Home Assistant wise is continued work on voice and doing things like a lot more interactive. Like I know that I've seen videos on YouTube and stuff where people are like, hey, let's try and do some like GPT stuff and like a lot of that kind of thing, right? I'd love to see some kind of local GPT instances, so on, and then that powering voice as well. So like I can be like, today I to my Amazon Echo, like myself or my wife or whoever, would be like, hey, you know, I don't know, tell me about the country of something or the other, right? Like give me information about this, right? And which is great, it does. Home Assistant voice today is a single point thing, right? So, and even in terms of understanding the way people talk and stuff like that, right? Nuances, like turn on the light versus turn the light on versus different things like that, right? So I think it just allows for a ton more flexibility there. So I don't know, I'd love to see something like that. Like, I don't want to use OpenAI. I don't want to like I don't want to use their like cloud entity, right? I want to see it locally if that's possible.
What's so cool about the voice this year is there's so many parts to a voice project, right? And we've been able to put that out and show actually the whole progress, right? Of all the chapters that have happened. And when the first chapter came out, people were like, but hey, why can't I talk to it? I do have to write. The first iteration was writing to it in text.
Yeah.
But it was about intent processing. And then we came up with voice, but had no wake words. And then everybody was like, where's the wake word? So finally, chapter 4, the wake word came. But this is like the whole train that's happening, right? And the whole pipeline, as it's actually what it's called inside Home Assistant as well, is now there. Now, the next part of the journey is like making each of those parts better and expanded, I guess, which is the exciting part now to see that happen. And but that is there. You can now easily swap things out or improve parts of things. And I'm really looking forward to that. I agree, Ron.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited.
Good. Phil?
Phil?
I'm going to go Home Assistant. I want to go Nabu Casa. I would love to see Nabu's next foray into hardware. I think we've had a big, you know, journey on Year of the Voice. So I'm assuming there's going to be some hardware to handle that. That's fine. So I'm not going to waste a wish on that. I would like Nabu Casa's next, you know, hardware to be into the control, like the tablet on the wall hardware sort of. How can I put the Home Assistant dashboard on my wall and not have an Amazon
ink display?
Exactly. Yeah. Not have an Amazon Echo tablet that, you know, is going to be turned off by Jeff when he kills their team. It's not going to be, you know, a Google Pixel tablet that, you know, is going to cost me, you know, almost $1,000. But, you know, is affordable and looks nice, attractive on the wall. Or is an e-ink display that is not, you know, ridiculously expensive, because e-ink is somehow expensive, really expensive, right? But, yeah, I would love Nabu Casa to get into that sort of hardware, because I think, yeah, one thing I've struggled with is, you know, how can I put a tablet on the wall and make it look nice without spending thousands of dollars on good hardware to do it?
Yeah.
And Yeah. And, you know, the Amazon Echo devices just become billboards around the house, you know, showing their, you know, stupid ads or whatever, which is the trade-off to have the little lady in every room. But that's, you know, that's my wish.
Yeah.
And for the, you know, for my own smart home, I'd love to be able to start using Matter. Like, I just want to stop talking about it, right? I want to start using it. Like, I just feel as though there's a whole bunch of talk going along about it and updates we're seeing, but there's nothing really there that can be used yet. No one's rolling out
updates. We have support for Meta fridges, but there's none you can buy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Let's stop talking about it and let's put it in the wild and start getting people using it. So,
And I think that sounds like that's less of Home Assistant, more of just the ecosystem, right? Like, just start building stuff Matter first, wherever possible.
What about you, Frank?
I have to make up something now really quick.
You asked the question.
Yeah, I know. And I could have expected it as well. Right. No. So for the smart home itself, like the general home, I think more local, I would love to see. I think that also is a little bit up to ourselves, like stop accepting cloud. I think we need to be more aware of what we do, right? Like, MyQ is a great example. Mazda is a really bit harder. Like, how would you build a local car? But nevertheless, like that, these are good examples in what's happening. So local is always been an important focus, and I think people should be more aware. But I also think if we stop buying cloud devices, eventually they will learn. So I agree with Juan's stance, like more local devices in general. If that's Matter, that's fine. Matter is local, that's good. But anything will do. Be more open and work together. That's for the general hardware stance. I don't have anything hardware wise I really want at this point that I miss, but more local would be nice.
Yeah,
definitely. From a Home Assistant perspective, oh man, I can open up books of stuff I want, I guess. But I work on this thing all day, right? I do have a thing that I really want to have for a long time, and I know many in the community want to, and I hope we can get to it this year. One is I made a proof of concept for already, which has been pending since April 2022, which is still open and there. It's complete and ready. It's just missing UX. But I want to add the notion of labels to Home Assistant. Maybe that's my wish, that it lands. Basically, I would love to be able to label things in my home and then target automations against the label. For example, second floor, or adding all Christmas decorations or things like that. So if you label things like that, you could filter down or target things in your home based on a free categorization that's not bound to areas. So that's one I wish, and I hope, just like many, many, many other people, we'll get folders in our automations and scripts dialogues to put things into. And that's my personal wish too. That's how I hope we get there. But in general, I hope we can do a lot of things this year. My personal wish would be a lot of improvements to how the UI for automations work. A little less complex, a little more sophisticated, but not necessarily less capable, if that makes sense. Because the automation engine in Home Assistant is insanely powerful, and it can be even more powerful, but it is already pretty complex, even in the UI. And I think for usability and for making more people use it in the correct way, we could improve there. And that's something I wish for. So this is basically my Home Assistant wishes right now. Yeah, I think that will do. But I'm more an automation-focused person than a UI dashboard-based person. So it depends, I guess, who you ask.
Yeah. Oh, those are good. I like that. Cool.
2024. Total fact, in case you listened, we're already started developing on 2024.1. As soon as the beta starts, the new development cycle starts for the next release, which will be the new year. So in our development team, the new year already started.
It's never weird. Ends, eh?
Never so ends. Weird. So weird. 2024.
That's right. Well, happy new year to the dev team.
Yeah. Yeah. Happy new year. On that 2024, when's the first release come out? Is it, you still going to do the first Wednesday of 2024?
Yeah, that's January the 3rd.
Yep. Nice. There you go. So I don't know if Rohan and I will be having an episode out that day. Depends on our collective movements, but we will be, nevertheless, we'll be somehow covering off 2024.1 in the new year. Frank, thank you so much for coming on,
celebrating
the end of the year.
Thank you for having me. That's great.
Yeah, it's been great. We have so much fun with you. And thank you for all your work on the show, release notes, and just being our point guy for everything release related. So really appreciate
you're
it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, my pleasure. Love it.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Awesome.
Happy New Year, Frank. See you next year.
Have a good one. Happy holidays.
Take care. Happy holidays. Cheers.
If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant Podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on hasspodcast.io.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.